Okay, so the top of Yud Ches Amud Aleph, the Gemara tells the story that Pinchas Achud de Mar Shmuel, Pinchas, who was the brother of Shmuel, Isra Be Milsa, which is the nice way of the Gemara telling us that he had lost a relative had passed away, and Pinchas was now an Avel. So all Shmuel went inside, L'mishal Taime, meaning to ask reasoning, which is just also a nice way of asking for Nechama, to give him some tam, to give him some sweetness, to comfort Pinchas, his brother. So it must have been they were half-brothers, I guess, because if they were brothers, then they would both be sitting Shiva. So he comes in, and Chaznu L'Tofrei, Davin Nefishin. So Shmuel noticed that Pinchas had nails that were very, very long. So Amale, Amai Lo Shaklis Le. So Shmuel asks Pinchas, why don't you cut them? They're a bit long, and then Avos allowed to cut nails. So Amale, Pinchas responds back to Shmuel, Ibedide Havami Mizal Sebe Kuli Hai. Had you been in Avel, would I have disgraced you so much? And the Gemara says, "Have kishkaga kishots milfnei hashalip." The quote of pasuk that appears in Koheles that it's like a mistake that came out of from in front of the ruler. The fact that he said something led to the following story. The fact that Pinchas said, "Shmuel, had this happened to you, so what happened?" The Yisrael b'milsa b'shmuel. Then Shmuel shortly thereafter finds out that he had one of his relatives passed away, and when he was sitting shiva, al Pinchas achul l'mishal taim aminei. Pinchas went in to comfort him to be menachem avel. Shaklinu l'tofrei v'chavtinu alape. Shmuel took and threw it in the face of Pinchas. Wow. Amalei lestacha bris krusa l'svasayim. You have no self control. You don't have the bris, the covenant. Being able to krusa l'sfasayim, to cover, close your lips. The fact that you said to me, had this happened to you, would I mizalza you? You gave me a klal, you cursed me, that I should have become an avel. Damar Rabbi Yochanan, minayin shebris krusa l'sfasayim. How do you know there's such a concept of a bris that closes up the lips? Shinemar vayom Avram el na'arav, and Avram said to the people with him, his aides, shivu lachem por mechamor. This is Akedis Yitzchak. He says, you stay here with the donkey. Me and the little one, the lad, namely Yitzchak, we're going to go up to the mountain. We're going to bow down. We'll return back to you. And since he said we're going to return back to you, says the Gemara, so the fact that he said that helped them in returning back safely. Yitzchak was not shechted, of course, as we know. So when you say something, it has a lot of kochos in the world above, and these things sometimes happen. So just like it has happened to Avram in a good way, it happened in a bad way, what Pinchas had said to Shmuel. So what was the whole back and forth, whether or not Pinchas was allowed to cut the nails? Pinchas did not cut the nails, and Shmuel felt that he was able to cut the nails. So the Gemara explained that Savar Minei, that he was of the opinion that Diyad in de Regalo. So that Shmuel felt, I guess, that we said earlier that Avel can't cut the nails. He thought when it came to the hands, one may cut the nails. Rashi explained, Savar Minei de Biyad, Mutter was permitted be meavelu mishum demais. It was disgusting. A person has long nails. I remember once seeing in the Guinness Book of World Records. Ever come across them? So they had the picture of some lady or man who had these nails that like curl, like really, really long. So they get a little
That's
disgusting.
I also have the Guinness World Records. Yeah.
Exactly.
All the way down, they're like twisting and turning.
Exactly.
And I'm like wondering, like, how does he hold a cup of coffee?
Yeah, exactly. So as the Gemara says, it's disgusting. It's disgusting when the nails are too long. So therefore, you're allowed to cut the hands and the fingers because it was disgusting. But the regel, which people don't see the regel, that you have to refrain from cutting during the period of Avelis. So the Gemara continues and says now, Amrav Anan bar Tachlifa lididi mefarshali mina d'shmuel. To me, it was once explained that according to Shmuel, lo shna yad, lo shna the regel. No, it makes no difference. One's allowed to cut both hands and legs across the board. This statement says, with a gnustri, which is some type of nail clipper, that's asr, but some other way would be mutter. So there is a machlokes as to when this line of gnustri asr, is that going back to chol hamoed, or is it going on avelus? Some rishon understand that this is referring to chol hamoed. That chol hamoed is asr to cut one's nails with a nail clipper, but using your other fingers, using your nail, biting your teeth, all that would be permitted. When it comes to Avelis, it would be permitted across the board to cut your nails using a nail clipper. While others say, no, this is talking about the Avelis, which is that was the context we're talking about, that even as an Avel, one may not cut the nails with a nail clipper. Okay, this is an interesting question. Tosis writes on top, the milsa dehader. So the fact that Pinchas said something to Shmuel that had this happened to you, would I be mezal to you? That caused somehow for Shmuel to be an avel. Tema Tosaf asks Tema Dilma mida tova meruba. So they brought a raya from Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu, where something positive happened, and he and Yitzchak returned safely. So we always know that mida tova is greater. So maybe by mida tova, by saying something that helps you do something good, but mida ra, maybe it's not the same halacha. They should have brought another Gemara, says Tosos. The Gemara in Brachos Av Yates tells us, Li'olam al yiftach adam piv l'satan. Person should never open the mouth up to the satan. Don't say anything bad, because that allows, somehow, gives the satan, oh, that's a good idea. The light bulb, turns on, and, oh, let's do that. So never, a person should never say anything that might, anything bad. So that, Tosos thought, would have been a better raya. It doesn't have an answer, and he leaves it like that. Gemara now tells a story that Amar Rav Shemin Bar Abba, Hava Kamina Kami Rabbi Yochanan. One time I was standing in front of Rabbi Yochanan in the base medrash, and it happened to be Chol Shel Moed. He's even in Chol Moed, they used to learn as well. V'shaklinu l'tofri b'shinei, and he bit his nails with his teeth. V'zarkinu, and he threw them. So, first of all, there's a story, a well-known story, that the Chazon Ish once saw someone on a Tuesday. He was biting his nails. He said, "You're Mechal Shabbos." Excuse me, Chazon Ish, it's Tuesday. What do you mean? You're Bechal Shabbos. So the meant when a person bites his nails is oftentimes a habit, and he won't realize and he'll end up biting his nails on Shabbos as well. This Gemara seems to be a steer to that, because Rabbi Yochanan was biting his nails on Chol Moed, and he did it, and he wasn't concerned of it being a habit. It could be, Rabbi Yochanan was certainly a different level than whoever he met in the street. Maybe Rabbi Yochanan was different. He felt the aim of...
I would say that Rabbi Yochanan would be able to overcome it. I wouldn't say that Rabbi Yochanan would accidentally bite his nails.
Right, exactly. But I guess it becomes an issue of human nature, that if Chazon Ish is pointing out human nature is that one who has a habit and biting nails is considered a habit, so Rabbi Yochanan shouldn't be doing either, because it might lead someone else to, oh, biting nails is okay, then someone else who doesn't have as much self-control would do it as well. I have no idea, I'm just pointing it out. I'm not sure what's said. It's just a horror that came to mind right now. So he bit his nails and he threw them. V'shaklinu l'tofer b'shinei, he bit his nails v'zakinu and threw them. So Gemara says, Shmamina tlas. We learn three halachas from this very, unassuming story. Shmamina mutalitol tzipranayim b'chol shemoid. Number one is one can cut his nails on chol moed. Now we said above, it might only be permitted, biting your nails, not necessarily cutting with a nail clipper. Shmamina two, ein b'en mishim mi'as, biting your nails is not something that's viewed as disgusting. I know nowadays a lot of people think it's disgusting to bite nails, and there are other indications that it is disgusting, but this Gemara indicates that it is not disgusting to bite one's nails, and maybe nowadays in society things are different. They used to also eat with their hands and no forks or knives. Nowadays that would be disgusting to do that. So, certain etiquette has changed. And three, Shema Mina Mutter Lezarkin, one's permitted to throw them away. Just do whatever you want with them. You have to dispose of them. You don't have to flush them down the toilet. You don't have to put them in the garbage. So Gemara says, wait a second, you're allowed to just throw them? Eini, is that true? V'hatani, the Braisa teaches us, Shlosh Dvarim Nemru B'tzipranayim. There are three things, three levels that are stated about one who cuts their nails. Hakovran Tzarchon, one who, say it again, Hakovran Tzadik, person who buries them is considered a Tzadik. Sorfon is a Chasson, who burns them is a Chasid. A Chasid is a higher level than a Tzadik. And Zorkin Rasha, someone who throws them is a Rasha. And we'll get to the reasons in a second. But we see throwing them to Russia. How come Yochanan throw the nails? Time am I? What's the reasoning why it's also to throw the nails? Shema tavor alen isha ubra. A woman might pass over them who's pregnant. Vitapil isha. And tapil, and she's going to cause her to lose her child. The fetus will be aborted. So isha be medrasha lo shchicha. That a woman is not found in a base medrash. And I know growing up in Tinek, we had women in the base medrash sometimes, but typically in a base medrash, women are not in a base medrash. So you're allowed to throw them on the floor. The only concern is that women might walk over. We'll explain some of these halachas in a moment.
Yeah, but isn't it dirty in the base medrash? Isn't there a problem with making the base medrash dirty?
That is a good question. Very good question. But we have to imagine what their base medrash were like back then. Now, their base medrash had like dirt floors. And their halachas, I actually saw this, I've never seen this before. Maybe it just happens to be. But there are halachas about spitting. If a certain person needs to spit during the Shemoneh Esrei or something, you have to spit on the floor and rub it into the ground. So that was something that's davening mincha in the city. This is actually a few weeks ago. This is a dai mincha in the city. It's a Chabad place. And during Aleinu, there's a Chabad guy just spits on the floor in the shul on the carpet and just rubs it out. I've never seen that before. I'm guessing maybe it was some din of spitting during Aleinu. Dafka, when he said maybe, you know, the Elilim, when talking about the gods or something, or maybe he happened to have to spit and just spit in the shul. I don't know. I thought it was pretty interesting. But there are stories, the Gemara is talking about halachas, about spitting on the ground floor, at least when it was dirt. So there too also, you probably could have just covered it up also. So it wasn't that big. It had dirt floors. So it was different. And sometimes they also had marble. We have other Gemaras where they had marble on the main floors as well, and wood or whatnot. So the Gemara says, okay, so the reason why he's allowed to throw it was because no women were found, and in the base magic that was okay. So the Gemara says, two more lines before I explain some of what we saw. Bechiteima, zimnan de mechanshi le v'shadi le avrai. Sometimes they're mechanshi, they're going to gather them together, they're going to sweep up the floors, and shadi le avrai, they're going to throw them outside, and then the woman's going to pass over from the street, and it's going to be dangerous for her. Says the Gemara, kevin dishtani yishtani, once it moves to location, it's okay. Somehow, when it only has a problem, it's only a sakana when it falls in the place where it was cut. Once you take it elsewhere, it's okay. So, a number of halachas have come up from this halacha. Let's go through one by one. Firstly, what exactly is the svar behind burning? Why is burning better than burying them? They seem to be both, removing it out of the way. So Rashi explains in the Maseches Nida that the reason why burning is considered better than burying it is because burning is possible that it could always be uncovered. But by burning it, you get rid of it, removed from the entire world, and never it will be uncovered again. So therefore, it's a safer way to dispose of the nails. The Yechiel Miparish, he says that the reason is nothing to do with covering it, because once you cover up the dirt, and if it uncovers, it's ready, in what the Gemara told us, came in the Ishtani Ishtani. It's ready, once it changed place, it changes. So covering up, he thought, was a way of changing places, so even if it did come uncovered, it would not be a danger. So what's the reason why burning is better? He says, very interesting. Since burning is much harder to do, you have to make a fire. Not that it's hard, but you put it in the floor and bury it is easy. But having to get a fire and burn it in a safe place, that requires a little bit more tircha.
Actually, nowadays it might be the opposite. Nowadays, 200 stones just drop.
That's true also.
Over here, you can't. You have to go outside, bury it, and come back in.
Right, I hear. So the equivalent of burying might be flushing it down the toilet, which is the custom. I'll explain that in a second. So, but at least in the times of Yechiel Miparis, so he thought that it was more of a tircha, and apparently when you burn the nails, it smells bad. I know burning hair smells bad. Apparently burning nails also smells bad. So since we have agmas nefesh, you get more schar when there's more agmas nefesh. So therefore he thought it was greater schar just doing a more tircha-oriented act. And others say that a more Kabbalistic reason is, not Kabbalistic, I guess, but more psychological. I don't know if this is to be true nowadays, but a person has a hard time parting with his nails. It's part of his body. It grew on him. So, I remember when my wife had our first baby, so the placenta is something that gets removed. And it's a strange thing. They take the placenta and they just throw it in the garbage. But I imagine it's maybe for someone somewhat emotional, it's part of her body. They just take a part of the body and just throw it out. I mean, that's what they do. So the same point at a lesser level, that the nails, some have a hard time parting with the nail, something that grew in their body. So therefore...
So therefore they don't cut it?
So I guess since... It's chalishas das during burning, there's more schar. Since it's harder for them to burn it, burying it, okay, bury something. But to burn it, that's harder for them to see. Since it's harder for them, it will create a greater schar. That's what some Rishonim explain. Now, the very mice of most people flush them out of the toilets now. That's how they get rid of them. And people think that's the best way. That's the burning. Rav Chaim Kanievsky and Rav Yosheva felt that flushing them down the toilet is like burying, because it's not, you didn't remove it from the world. It's possible to get them back. You know, if you go down to the sewage, there might be some nails down there. But it's not gotten rid of the world. So what they would do, apparently, they would cut the nails and they keep them, I don't know, in a box or cup or something. And I don't know if every week or every month, they would take the nails and just burn them. They would be Mekai in this din of burning the nails. And Rav Chaim still does. Now let's talk about the halacha for a second about why is it true that if a woman steps over a nail, it's going to cause her to have a miscarriage. So a few reasons are given. One says because it's disgusting. They're going to see a nail and get so grossed out from it, they're going to, it's going to cause a danger to the child. Others say something to do with kshefus, about witchcraft, there's something very deep about the nails and the shadim. You know, you have these stories of a dibuk being stuck into people, some of these stories, and it comes out of the nail. I don't know, something beyond my understanding. And the third reason is that since the Chet Adam Rishon and Chava, initially when the Adam and Chava were born, they had a nail shell all around their body. After they had sinned, the nail was removed, and it was just left to the fingertips. That's all that was left. So when a woman sees this, she kind of gets a chalishas adas, she gets a little weak and upset because this was all her, you know, cause of chava. And that somehow caused it reminds the base and shalmala of the onus of women, the nail of the woman, connect the two of them together, it creates a danger for the woman above. Okay, let's go weiter now. The Gemara says now, a few narrow lines up, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Zug ba mechamasan, lifnei Rebbe. A zug, a pair of people, Tamini Chachamim, came from a town called Chamson in front of Rebbe. Umar Zutra, Masni Zug, and Rav Zutra had a different version of the story. He taught Zug ba mechamasan lefnei Rebbe, ubikshu mimenu tziparnaim. And they asked a question about tziparnaim. I guess it was talking about the situation of Avelis. V'hitilahem, he said, you're allowed to cut your nails during the period of Avelis. And he added afterwards, in Bikshu Mimenu, had they asked me, Safa, could you cut your mustache? Hitilahem, I would have permitted them to cut the mustache. They didn't ask me, but I would have permitted them to cut the mustache. Ushmu Amar af Bikshu Mimenu Safa. No, they actually did ask him about the mustache. V'hitilahem, he permitted them to cut their mustache during the period of Shiva, which is fascinating. So Amar Avital, Safra, Mishmei Dirav, this is a person, Avital was his name. He was a sofer. He said the name of Rav. Safa mizavis lazavis. A person is allowed to cut from one end of the mouth to the other end of the mouth. You could cut the, shave down the mustache entirely. And Amar Rabbi Ami uvisafa hamakevis. Now this is not just anybody could just come along and cut his mustache off. It's only a safa that's makevis that gets in the way. It gets in the way of what? Gets in the way of eating. So we have this halacha l'maisa when it comes to avelus. We have this halacha when it comes to 9 days, those who don't shave, that the mustache gets in the way, where your food gets stuck in it or gets in the way of food getting into your mouth. So I don't know exactly the gedder of that. One's permitted to trim their mustache. Samar of Nachman bar Yitzchak lididi kisafa ha-makeves damili. For me, having a mustache at all, any amount of facial hair on the mustache area at least, so then that is considered makeves. Now, even though it wasn't lamaisa makeves, it wasn't long enough, but since he was anina daita, he was what's called an istinus, he was very particular and finicky about any facial hair, he was permitted to cut. Now, this is the hetter that many, many rabbis in Avelim use of shaving, cutting the hair. Now, I don't think anyone shaves during Shiva. I think most people keep this practice. I think usually it's more used for washing and bathing. But I think most keep Shiva entirely. Don't shave during Shiva. And even during Shloshim for a parent. I think people are pretty makbid about it. But this is a story about Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, who apparently he did not. Okay. So Amar Rav Avital. And again, I'm not sure if he must have kept the beard. The beard doesn't get into the way of the hair. It's really a mustache in the way of eating. So maybe he just had a beard without a mustache. I don't know. Now that we're on the topic of quoting Avital Hasafra, Mishmei D'Rav, we have another statement in his name. He said a very interesting halacha, an interesting story, I guess. Paro Shaya Bime Moshe. Paro, there are many paros throughout the generations. The paro who lived during the times of Moshe Benu, who Amma, he was an Amma tall. Someone told me that the paro who lived by Moshe Benu was considered very, very tall in his time. Now, an Amma is not very tall. Amma is, according to Rashi, from my elbow to my middle finger, that's what an Amma is. According to the Chazon Ish, it's almost 20 inches, not very tall. So maybe I'm misunderstanding something about, or maybe the person was incorrect, but someone once told me that. So Paro, who lived in the time of Moshe, was only an Amma long. Vizekenu Amma, and his beard was an Amma long. Uparmashiko Amas Vizeris, and his Amma, which Rashi tells refers to his Aver, that was an Amma Vizeris, and a little bit longer. So the Kaim Mashinemar, this is to be Kaim the Pasuk that says, Vishafel Anoshim Yakim Alea. The lowly people, I will yakim aleha. I will raise up, I guess. Is there a good interpretation of that pasuk? A translation? Let's see.
He appoints the lowest of men over it.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. So the lowest of men, so I guess Paro was a very...
Over the kingdom of
man. Aha. Uh-huh. So Paro, who was very, very short, so he was appointed king. This also, who was the that great general? Was it Alexander the Great? Was he very short? Was he the one?
Napoleon
was very short. So I guess we find in history sometimes.
Oh, But the commentary says don't take it literally.
Okay.
He was being described as short because he was a lowly person.
In terms of his midos.
And the idea that his beard was as long as his height shows that he was very vain. And the other thing that was long showed that he was overwhelmed by his tibus.
Okay, so this is just all symbolic.
Right.
So I'm telling you
that he was physically tall.
Might have been true. Okay, he told me that they apparently found encased somewhere, I guess, under a pyramid, that who they believe was the power of the times Moshe Rabbeinu, and apparently he was known. They're written about him very, very tall, but he was only like 4'10" or something, and that was considered tall based on what they have written. So back then, we had different heights. Okay. So then the Gemara quotes another statement in the name of Amar. Avital Safar Shmei Rav Paro Shaya Bimei Moshe Am Gushi Haya. He was Am Gushi. What does Am Gushi mean? So Rashi tells us Am Gushi Havak Dichsiv Hinei. Let's read the rest of the Gemara first. Am Gushi Haya Dichshenemar Hinei Yotze Hamayma. He went out to the water, and the rest of the pasuk tells us Hinei Yotze Hamayma Vinizat the Kraso Asfas Hayor, and that's where Moshe and Aaron met up with Paro by the riverbanks. And Hashem tells Aaron and Moshe to take that staff that he used to turn into a snake. So what does it mean that he was Amgushi? Very strange word. Rashi tells us Amgushi have a dechsev hainei yotzei hamayma. Machlokas b'mesech Shabbos ayin hei. There's a machlokas what exactly this meant. Chad amar charashi. One said he was a charashi. What's a charashi? L'halchi yotzei liyara b'shvil machshefos. He was a sorcerer. He went to the riverbanks to do some sorcery. And idach, the other opinion, amar gidufa. He was a gidu falashim megadif. He was a blasphemizer. He cursed Hashem, and lahachiyote. That's why he went to the river banks. Show the yours for me. And I made it. I created the world. I created the river. He thought he was God. So that was the cursing of Hashem, or the megadif that he was performing. Okay. Now the Gemara goes on to discuss something we saw in the first mission of the parak. Misha told us ve'ilu mechabsim b'moed habavim medinas hayam, and so on and so forth. The list of individuals who are permitted to wash their clothing during Chol Moed, although normally people cannot, these people can. The first one listed was someone who was overseas and didn't have a chance to come back before Yom Tov. He only landed on Chol Moed. He's permitted to wash his clothing. So Amar Vasi, Amar Yochanan, Misha Ein Lo Ela Chalok Echad Mutar L'Chabso B'Chol Shemoed. Also, somebody who only has one robe, let's call it a robe, I think he used to wear robes, one robe, he was also permitted to wash clothing because he's onus. He doesn't have a choice. To wear the same robe for 7 days is a lot. It gets smelly, it gets dirty. So he could wash his clothing during Chol Moed. So Mesir Rabbi Yirmiyah, Eilu Mechapsim B'Moed, Habam Midinis Hayam V'Chulei. So the Rabbi Yirmiyah points to the Mishnah that has a whole list of people, 6, 7, 8 people who are allowed to wash during the Chol Moed. Honey, and only these, Mi She'in Lo Ela Chalok Echad Lo, but it doesn't list a person who only has one robe. The fact that it's not on that list, which seems like a complete list, sounds like a person with one suit or one robe cannot wash his clothing on Chol Moed. So Amar le Rabbi Yaakov le Rabbi Yirmiyah. Yaakov responds, "Asfar lacham asnisin." I'll explain to you the Mishnah. Afagav ishle trei umutanfei. So it says, even a person who might have two, which is the typical case, he's still not allowed to wash the clothing unless he's one of the people who are listed in the Mishnah. But if he only has one suit, one robe, then he would be allowed to. Shalach Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yaakov bar Giru mishrei Rabbi Yochanan. He sent the following message in the name of Yochanan. Kli pishon mutar lechapso bechol shemoid. A flax type of a clothing shirt is allowed to be washed on Chol Hamoed. Right, what's the reason for this? Why flax? And they explain because there's not much tircha apparently in cleaning it. Doesn't require much. I don't know what it entails, but you don't have to scrub it at all. It's a pretty easy, smooth clean. Therefore, it's permitted. My asks Masiv Rava. Rava says,
yeah.
So it gets there very easily, and it's easily cleaned, so therefore that combination allows you to wash it. So the Rava challenges the statement, Mesir Rava, Matpechos, this is a Gemara we saw earlier, Matpechos Hayadayim, hand cloths, and Matpechos Hasaparim, cloths that were used by the barbers. Not exactly what that exactly was done, I guess maybe just that little covering they put on top of you while you get a haircut. honey in kli pishalom. So those were examples that was permitted. The Mishnah told us those were permitted to wash in cloth. That was the end of the Mishnah. You can wash hand cloths and wash, you know, washcloths and barber cloths. Those are permitted. But anything else, kli pishalom, which is not on the heterim of the Mishnah, would not be allowed. No, our Mishnah is talking about other minim, other types of materials, other cloths. When it comes to kli pishon, certainly allowed to wash it. When it comes to other materials, a wool or cotton, whatever else it might be, that's there's only a heter when it comes to those two things, barber cloths and hand cloths. Samar Barhidi, the Didi, Barhidi said to me, Chazili, Yamasha Tiveria, I saw the water of Tiveria, I guess probably Yam Kinneret, perhaps. The Mafkilei Mishichli Dimali, I saw that coming out of it was Mishichli Dimani Kisna Bechol Demoid. Let's see, how do you define that? It's falling like, I don't know, buckets that were full of Beged Pishon that were washing Chamoid. Everyone used to go down to the rivers to wash them. We see from here that it was permitted to wash kli pishon on Chol HaMoed. So, maskivla abaye, man leimel on the baratzen chacham avdi. You can't bring a raya. Who said they were permitted to do that? Who said they were doing the right thing? Dilma shalol baratzen chacham avdi. Maybe they're doing against the chachamim's will, and that's not a raya from there. If you saw a rav doing it, that's another story. But if you see a certain community doing it, that's not necessarily a proof that that was okay to be done. So, the Gemara told us before that one of the things one's allowed to wash during Chol HaMoed was the barber's cloths, the barber covers. Now, why is that permitted? Don't we know that's usher to get haircuts during Chol HaMoed? That's one of the things you can't do. Unless you're one of the eight exceptions, someone who came back from jail, someone who came from overseas, you're not allowed to get it. So why are you allowed to wash these cloths during Chol HaMoed? So Tosfos on the top tells us, Hasaparim perish lehistaper umistaper lechol osam sheitir chachamim. No, you're allowed to wash these clothing for those who you're allowed to cut the hair for. So let's say they come into the guy says the barbershop's closed, but he calls up Ruben and says, listen, I need a haircut. I just got back from overseas. I just got out of jail. He says, okay, let me go wash the clothing so you can have the cloth so you can have a nice clean cover. So that's the situation where it's permitted. But just stomp to start washing all the covers, that would not be permitted because haircutting is not permitted either. Okay, the new Mishnah tells us now that the following things are permitted to be written on Chol HaMoed. Now, typically, writing is usher. These are the exceptions where it's mutter. Kiddushin nashim, the person wants to perform kiddushin with a woman. Now, this is not referring to marriage, it's referring to the stage beforehand. The gittin can be written on Chol HaMoed. The shovrin is referring to certain receipts and different interpretations of what it means. But it says that the malva writes to the lova that he was paid back. So, you know, when the lova pays back the money, here's your receipt that I received your payment. The lova should hold on to that so the malva can't collect the second time from him. Daitiki is a shtar tava. It's a will. The matana of person right gives a gift. That's also allowed to be written a document proving the gift was given over. Prisbolin, very appropriate for this month, should be written because by the Shemitah year, they undo all outstanding loans. So Prisbol is a way of circumventing that, allowing the loan to last throughout Shemitah. Igro Shum are letters of where the basin assesses a value of something, a field that has to be taken ownership of. Igros Mazon, these are when a person takes upon himself, when he marries a woman who has a previous child from previous marriage, so the husband's going to take upon himself to support the daughter of his new wife. That's called Shtar Mizonos, a document of obligating himself to pay the Mizonos for the daughter. Chalitza, the Chalitza was done, which I actually got a few months ago, I got to have seen actual Chalitza in Brooklyn. A real Chalitza was done, which is very, very interesting. So the document needed for that is able to be written during Chol HaMoed. Umeunim, Meunim is when a girl is married off by her father passed away, she's a yosam, her brothers and mother marry her off, she could do miyun to, it's a form of gittin, of undoing the marriage that wasn't so binding, that was performed by, on behalf of her brothers. And shar beruin, machokas what shar beruin are, Rashi here tells us it refers to when basin picks this chelik versus that chelik, when it comes to dividing up for Yerusha. Others say it talks about Shabirum is Zeb Bora, a Mishnah in the third pack of Sanhedrin, where when people decide which basin to go to, two people are having an argument, they have to choose which basin, they each get to pick a basin, it's called Zeb Bora Zechad, Zeb Bora Echad, it's called Zabla, that might be what it's referring to. Gzeros, Beis Din, if Beis Din makes a new decree, that could be written down as well. Vigros shel Rishus, and some say Rishus is Rashus in Lashon of the government. The government makes a certain rule that's permitted to be written down as well. So a whole list of things that are mutter. So Amar Shmuel, Shmuel says now, mutter la'aris isha b'chal shemoyed, a woman is permitted to engage a wife during Chol HaMoed. So nowadays we do the, what's called the Erusin, is the same thing as Kedushin. We do that the same time we do the Nisuin. There's two stages to getting married. There's the Kedushin and there's the Nisuin. Kedushin is when the man places the silver ring on his wife-to-be, and he places the tabas, the ring, on under the chuppah, and that's Kedushin. And then the chuppah overall, that's considered the Nisuin. So only Kedushin is permitted to be done during Chol HaMoed. Why? Shemi kadmenu acher, maybe someone else might come and chop her away. So she's an available, she's a single lady, and she's very much desired by many men. So if you were the first one to chop her, you should marry her, get engaged to her quickly before anybody else takes her away. That's why it's permitted. So the question that Rishonim ask, so had not been for that reason, why would it be usher to get engaged in the first place? Nisuin's usher, you can't get married because ain't marvin simcha b'simcha. When it comes to chasna, you can't have a simcha on Chol HaMoed because you're mixing two simchas together. But erusin is just a period of engagement. There was no simcha back then. So what was the iser? So something, no, taka, there was a simcha. Erusin also, it just that marriage, which, you know, the place in the ring on, even though the marriage might take place a year later, even the erusin was considered a simcha. Others say, no, you know why it's usher? Because we had a mission before that told us that you're not allowed to do mekach hamemcha. You can't do any buying and selling. When you place a ring on this woman's hand, finger, it's you acquiring her, you're buying her. It's a lot of big sugyas and kedushin talk about whether we view this as an acquisition or you just basically, you're excluding her from the rest of the world marrying you. She's exclusive to you now, but there's no real purchase. Obviously, no, it's a purchase. So it's a big machlokas, and it comes out in this Gemara as well, that it might be also because you're buying her, or it might be also, no, there's no purchasing here. It's also because there's simcha here. That's the two reasons why it might be also. Gemara says, according to the, you know, going along with this Gemara, that one may engage a woman during Chol HaMoed, lest someone else take her. Lema mesaile, maybe our Mishnah could serve as a proof. Says the Mishnah, Elu kosvin v'moed, the following you could write on Chol HaMoed, kedushin nashim. My lav shtar kedushin, mamish. Does kedushin nashim not mean to be taken literally? They allowed to write the shtar that so and so, Reuven and Leah, let's say they got Yaakov and Leah, they got engaged to each other. Where it says, lo, shtar psiksa. The Gemara, the Mishnah not referring to shtar kedushin, it's referring to something called shtar psiksa. What's shtar psiksa? Gemara explains, uktav gidal amarav, damarav gidal amarav. Kama tanosin levincha, when the parents would marry off the children, they would support the children for a number of months, number of years, and so on. So they write the following, kama tanosin levincha. They say to the father of the son, the chassan, how much are you going to give to your son? Kach v'kach, I'm going to give you this much money monthly and give a stipend of $500 a month. And they say to the father of the daughter, of the wife, the kala, kama ta nosin levitcha, how much are you going to give your daughter? Kach v'kach, you're going to give this amount. Omdu v'kitchu, they make the agreement, the business part is all set up, and they get married and they kitchu. Kana hein heim dvarm haniknu v'amira. So the very fact that they had no document here necessarily, but they just they didn't pick up any do any chalipin. They just had a document and they said, "Let's agree to the document." That's binding. Anyway, so that document is what's permitted to be written on Chol HaMoed, not necessarily the document of kedushin. Mar says, "Leim v'sayle." Perhaps the following could serve as a proof. Ein nosim nashim b'moed. Our Mishnah told us in Daf Ches. One's not allowed to marry a woman on Chol HaMoed. Lo besulos, lo amanos, not a woman who's never been married before, not a woman who has been married before. Lo yavim, you can't perform yibum. Person's brother dies without children, so he performs yibum to his sister-in-law. Mipnei simcha lo. All those are also to get married because it's a simcha, and we said ain marvin simcha b'simcha. But we could learn from this. Hol are shari, but it's permitted to get engaged. Only nisuin's usher, but the first stage of erusin, that would be permitted. So the Gemara says, no, lo mi bai kamar. Lo mi bai la'aris. Needless to say, la'aris, which is certainly aser. Lo kavi mitzvah. What's the reason to marry, to engage a girl? There's no mitzvah involved in that. El afilu li sanami, even marrying, which is a mitzvah, the ka'avin mitzvah, you might think would be permitted because it's more of a big Indian, the mitzvah, of course. Aser. Even that's aser as well. So there's very important Gemara here because the Gemara says that erusin is in fact not a mitzvah. The Gemara in Ksubis has a brach of erusin. Shashalanu Sarusos, Vitilanu Konasulim, and the bracha that we say under the chuppah after getting engaged. And there's big machlokes rishonim, the nature of that bracha. The rush in the back of Ksubas writes that bracha is a birchas hashevach. The Rambam writes it's a birchas mitzvah. The Rambam felt that erusin is a mitzvah. When a man places a silver ring on his wife-to-be, that's a mitzvah. He's mekayim a mitzvah. And therefore, the bracha that's said under the chuppah is considered a birchas mitzvah. The rush is, no, there's no mitzvah at all. Erusin is simply a hechsher mitzvah. It's a way of getting to the nesuin, a way of getting to the peruvu, the mitzvah peruvu. But erusin itself is not a mitzvah. And this Gemara seems to support that. The Gemara tells us here that erusin slash kedushin does not qualify as a mitzvah. Gemara is going to bring another raya that perhaps erusin is mutter on Chol HaMoed. Gemara says, Tashma. The Tana de Bei Shmuel Ma'arsin, person may get engaged, aval lo konsin, but you cannot enter. You cannot bring a wife into your home. You cannot get married. Vein osin sudas erusin, you also can't make a meal of celebrating the engagement. Lo miyavin, you also can't perform yibum, because that's the simcha. Shema mina. So the Brisa clearly states that one is allowed to do erusin, you just can't do nesuin. Shema mina, Shmuel was right that one can get engaged on Chol HaMoed. Morris says, wait a second, the whole Svar of Shmuel was a little bit not so clear. Me, Amar Shmuel, Shemek. Yeah.
The Bei Shmuel is going to be used as a proof for that Shmuel is right?
A very good question. I wonder, the Tana Bei Shmuel, is that the same source as Shmuel? That's a very good question. The Chora, it's a Brisa came out of Bei Shmuel, so Shmuel, that's what it literally means. That's Taka, good question. It must be a different statement. It must be a brisa that came from another Shmuel. I'm guessing, whenever the word Tana tells us is a brisa. Now, Shmuel was an Amora. So there must have been a base medrash of Shmuel, another Shmuel of a Tana, I guess, that came from his base medrash. And therefore you could use that as support. That's my only guess. I know the Masifta writes that there's a brisa that says, bring a raya from the brisa, so it's referring to this Tana de Beis Shmuel as a brisa. But, oh, we have a Rav Shmuel. The Gemara does have a Rav Shmuel. But usually Rav is a Mora, though. Not a. Is there a Rebbe Shmuel in the Gemara? I have to do a search for it. But you're going to probably have to say, because it's Tana, the Beis Shmuel, a Brisa that came out of Shmuel, therefore is a Tanaic statement, and therefore it's for service as proof. I guess it's more coincidental that people of the same name supporting each other, but not the same person. Gemara says, "Mi Amar Shmuel Shemay Kadmenu Acher." Did Shmuel really say this? That he was concerned someone might come and chop his wife to be away. You have to engage her as soon as possible, lest someone else is going to get her. V'hamar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Doesn't Rav Yehuda say in the name of Shmuel? Bechol Yom V'Yom, every single day, Bas Kol Yotis V'Omeris. A heavenly voice comes out and says as follows: Bas Ploni LePloni, so and so, the daughter of Reuben is going to marry Shimon. And so that Ploni, and the field that is on Woodbury Boulevard is going to go to this person. So, is everything predestined? There's no such thing as taking someone else's. Everything is bashert. So how could Shmuel entertain the possibility that, oh, someone might take it away? Just wait till after Chol HaMoed. You're not going anywhere. Kadosh Baruch already made the statement. The voice said, it's going to be yours. El Hashem Yikad Menu Acha Berachman. Perhaps someone else is going to be able to chaper by davening birachman. He's going to daven so much, I really want to marry this woman, I really want to do it hard, or marry, davened hard. Kadosh Baruch says, I can't say no anymore, and he gives in. So that's the concern. Kiyad the Rava Sham el Hau Gavra, Rava once heard a person that was debay rachme, hachi, debay rachme, who's davening. And he said as follows, Amar tis davening li plani yasa, I want to marry, I want to meet this little woman, Leah. And Amr Lay, so Rava says to him, Lo tibai rachman hach, we don't daven to Hashem in this way. Yichazi lecha, lo azdach minach. If she's fit for you, it's going to work out. And vi lo, and ak kapar tibo. And then, kapar tibo. It's not going to work. The davening's not going to be effective at all. So just don't daven for these things. It's brought down that, it's hard to. You have to be very careful when you daven. I want to move to this place. I want to marry this person. I want this job. It's hard for us to know what's best for us sometimes. So Rava says, You know, sometimes it's like one shouldn't daven for these specific things. You could marry, I want to be married. But to marry to who, that's a different story. I want to buy a house. Well, which house? That's already, you don't know which house is good for you. Certain things you need, certain things are best for you. Like getting married and getting a parnasa and having a place to live. But where and the details of it, that you shouldn't be so specific, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu will make sure you get what's best for you. So Basar Hachi, after this, after Shamed Kamar, so then Rav Asa heard the same guy saying, okay, I'll change, I'll tweak my davening a little bit. O ihu limus mekameh, o ihi tamus mekameh. So he's davening, either I should die before her, so I shouldn't see her marry somebody else, or she should die before me, so I shouldn't have to see her marry somebody else. Okay, so if she's not for me, fine, but don't let somebody else marry her. So Amar Lei, lava minu l'chalo tibayla de milsa hachi? Didn't I tell you don't daven like this? I think that ends the story. So either way, even though we see from here that person shouldn't daven for to marry a specific woman, the Gemara does tell us through Rachmim, people do daven this way. They fall in love so much. So through Rachmim, sometimes the Kadosh Baruch Hu does give in to their tefillahs, even though the tefillahs might be incorrect, which itself is a fascinating concept. Okay, the Gemara goes on now and talks about Amar Rav Mishim Rabbi Ruvain ben Istrubli, a name we don't find often in the Gemara. Min haTorah, min haNevi'im, min haKesuvim, may Hashem or may He ish al ish min haTorah. That may Hashem or may He. May Hashem. Okay. So we see from these three places, from Hashem, that a man is destined to be with a woman's destined to be with a man, I guess. Minat Torah tells us, "Dichsevayan Lavan uBesuel," and Lavan said to Besuel, he said, "Vayomru Hashem Yotze Adavar Hashem comes from Hashem." If it's meant to be that Rivka and Yitzchak should be getting married, all Minat Shemayim, all Tiat Shemayim is going to work out. Minat Neviim, "Dichsevayavivim Olo Yadu Ki Hashem He." The parents, I don't know the context of the story, this is found in Shoftim. It sounds like maybe it's referring to Shimshon. Referring to Shimshon. So they said, okay, then the parents didn't know that this was from Hashem. But it was from Hashem, even though it wasn't noticed by them. Min haksuvim, v'ho nachlas avos, u'mi Hashem isha mishachelas mishachelas. Here's also from Hashem, the woman comes from Hashem. I guess the fact that she finds a man, a husband, is all from Hashem. Vama Rav, Mishim Rebbe, another statement of Rav, the name of Rebbe Ruvain ben Atstrubli. Vama Levi Masisa, others say it was really a Brisa that taught this Tana. Am Rebbe Ruvain ben Atstrubli, Ein Adam Nechsh Bedavar, El Imkin Aso. Person's never accused of something unless he actually did it. No such thing as false accusation. Vim lo asa, and if he didn't do it, which sometimes does happen, a false accusation, kula asa miksasa. If he didn't do the entire aver he's being, or crime he's being accused of, he did part of it. Vim lo asa miksasa, and let's say he didn't do any of it, he her believa lasa, so he considered doing it. Vim lo asa, vim lo he her believa, and if he didn't lasa, if he didn't even consider doing it, rachem shasa v'samech, he saw all the people doing it, and said, oh wow, that's pretty interesting. He saw murder, he saw people stealing, said, oh, that's it, he got hanah from it. So a person only nechsar, there's something in him that somehow allowed, even though it's somehow metaphysically, which you don't understand, cause other people to accuse him of doing it. Mesir Rabbi Yaakov. Rabbi Yaakov asks and challenges. Pasuk tells us in Melachim, V'yachafeu b'nei Yisrael dvarm, and b'nei Yisrael hid things ashelo kein al Hashem Elokehem, and he hid certain things. Let's keep explaining here. How does the Darshko explain what this pasuk means here?
Let's see. Well, it translates that the Bnei Yisrael imputed things that were not so.
Okay, so we see then there was a chashad, there was a accusation of things that may not have actually happened. Yeah. So the Gemara says, Hasam lahachis hu David, So there, they did just to create anger. Okay, they had a certain agenda. Okay, so there's no question from there. The Gemara brings another raya, Toshma, by Kanu Lemoshe, B'machan L'Aaron, Kadosh Hashem. So this is a pasuk in Tehillim which describes us that I guess by kind of lashon of jealousy.
Yeah, Korach.
So I guess Korach was jealous of Moshe Rabbeinu in the Machna and to Aaron that he was Kadosh. So what's the drasha? Rav Shmuel. Oh, he's Rav Shmuel, by the way. But we want Rebbe Shmuel. Okay. Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak. Amar melamed shekol echad kina liishto mimoshe. See from here that each person was jealous of his wife to his wife from Moshe. They warned them. The Dinim of Sota, they said, you are not allowed to be with Moshe Rabbeinu. That's going to be Isser of Sota. They were kind of the first mission in Sota talks about this. It's Kinoi Vestira. So the loch is that if you give a warning to your wife not to be with a particular man, and you find them to be in an area that's secluded, so that's called stira, and then you force her to drink the mesota, the sota waters. So every single man, you can imagine this, Moshe Rabbeinu, they said to all their wives, you cannot be in your Moshe Rabbeinu. Can you imagine the respect or lack of that they had for Moshe Rabbeinu? It's absolutely wild. So anyways, the Gemara says, so what do we see from here? So they were choshed. They're accusing Moshe Rabbeinu of something which certainly never crossed his mind, and something he never actually saw, certainly wasn't happy about. So how is it possible they were choshed Moshe Rabbeinu? Hasa mishum sinahu David. They hated him. I don't know if we can comprehend this, the hatred they had for Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm not sure what to say about that. Anyways, the Gemara says, Tashma, Amar Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says, Yih chalkim mi shechoshin also b'davar. Rabbi Yossi says, I hope that I have the same portion with those who people were choshed v'einbo, people who were accused falsely, I want to have their portion. And Vamar Papa Lididi, Chashudin Livil Havabi, people who accused me of something that never happened. So we see from here that there are such things as false accusations. So that's a Gemara Lokashin, that's not a stira. Ha Bakalad Pasik, Ha Bakalad Lo Pasik. It depends. It depends if it's a rumor, news that's going to end or not end. If it's a news that's going to end, so that's okay. We have false accusations that end up, dissipating. But if it's a rumor that goes on forever, that's something that only will happen if it's based on something. Now, a rumor, a news that goes on for how long is it considered the lopasik? Does that have to go on forever, eternally? Certainly not. There's no such thing as a news story that goes on forever. But how long does it have to last for it to be considered, okay, this must be a serious accusation? So Amr Abaye says, Amr Ali was said to me once, Im domi dimasa yoma palga. What does Im domi mean?
Ain.
Not?
His mother.
Im domi dimasa yoma palga. If it lasts for a day and a half. The news story is the front pages for a day and a half, so then that qualifies as a long story. Upaga, fine. Vahani mile dilapasik beni beni. That's only if it didn't interrupt between them. About pasik beni beni lasted, but if it did stop between them, then it's not an issue. What do you mean beni beni? It's only if that initial call and if it was continuous. But let's say it stopped and 2 months later came up again. It kept on resurfacing. So that's not a concern. It has to be a continuous news story. Again, I don't know what's considered a news story on the radios, on the newspapers for a day and a half. That's considered a kalad l'piska and must have certain truth to it. Nothing where it says v'chi pasik beni beni, and if it does stop, there's an interim where it does stop. L'amrin el de lo pasik mach mazira. It's only if it didn't stop because of any fear. It just happened to stop. It became old news. About pasuk machmas yira, but it's because there's a story about the president, and he said, "Stop writing about me," and it's not because of the yira. That's not considered stopping. That's considered still continuous. And it's only true if it didn't novit, well, it didn't come out again. I guess I thought we said that before. About the hadav novit lo. If it comes up a second time, then it's not true anymore.
It says if it doesn't come, if it doesn't come back with the same force as before.
Uh huh. Okay, and then and finally, lo amar el de lesli oyvim is only if he doesn't have any enemies. If all it's like oyvim, he has enemies who are out to get him, the journalists. Or even Hudafki Lakala, the journalist who made up the story, so it's not necessarily true. So a lot of you know, qualifications have to be met in order for this to be a serious rumor that will show an accusation is based on something. Okay.
Qualifications, who doesn't have enemies?
Right, exactly, who doesn't have enemies, right? So unlikely that any of these will really be true nowadays, but these are the lists you need. Okay, everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos. Yeah.